The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzmann presiding before court number 21-00031. ZA Seafoods Private Limited et al. Versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Good morning. My name is Robert Gosling, appearing today on behalf of ZA Seafoods Private Limited and a number of other Indian producers and exporters of frozen shrimp products.
And good morning. This is Kara Westerkamp on behalf of the United States, and I'm joined by Spencer Neff from the Department of Commerce.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Zachary Walker of Picard Kenson Rowe. I am here today on behalf of Defendant Intervenor, Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee, joining by phone on behalf of Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee is my colleague Nathaniel Rickard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. I understand that Mr. Goal has discussed, or you have discussed with Mr. Goal, your time allotments. Of course, the plaintiff gets full time, 20 minutes. I understand the government will be taking 14 minutes, and the defendant intervener will be taking 6 minutes. We have, of course, read all your filings, and thank you for your responses to the questions for oral argument. This is an opportunity, really, to rebut the answers that you received the opposing counsel. So without further ado, why don't we begin with the plaintiff, Mr. Gosling?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Because of the limited time and with the court's permission, I will forego an opening statement and go straight to the heart of the questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
Your first question to the government was, to the extent the court finds that Commerce relied upon the EPA determination in determining that ZA Seafood's sales to Vietnam were not representative, how does the reversal of that determination affect this case? I want to reiterate at the outset for the record that it is plaintiff's position that neither the EPA determination nor its reversal are relevant to a determination as to whether ZA Seafood sales to Vietnam were or were not representative. Defendant's position appears to be that the EPA determination is relevant, but that the reversal of that determination is not relevant. To me, that appears a bit arbitrary, but more problematic is defendant's assertion that Commerce's determination that ZA Seafood sales to Vietnam were not representative was based on substantial evidence contained within CBP's EPA determination. And that is fraught with a lot of problems. For example, in its response to the court's question, defendant claims that CBP's finding that Minfu made a shipment of Indian origin shrimp commingled with Vietnam origin shrimp means that Commerce could infer the existence of a transshipment scheme. Perhaps, but why does that allow Commerce to infer the existence of a scheme including ZA Seafood's merchandise? Commerce relied on the EPA determination to an even greater extreme level. For example, it concluded that ZA Seafood sales were not representative because of the evasion scheme, and that such sales were not truly prices for consumption in Vietnam because the shrimp is exported without further processing, and those sales do not represent sales made for consumption in Vietnam, given that they are sold to other countries, including the United States. Commerce, of course, is permitted to make reasonable inferences from the record, but Commerce may not simply speculate, and its conclusions are not reasonable when no evidence supports such assertions and where there is no other evidence on the record that represents their veracity. Simply put, substantial evidence does not support their assertions that ZAF's sales to Vietnam were part of Minfu's alleged evasion scheme. With respect to the second question, we agree, plaintiffs agree that Commerce's evaluation of the representative of third country sales is severable from a viability determination. I think that is something we can all agree on. With respect to question 2-3, the question was, to the extent ZA Seafoods was unaware of the transshipment scheme, in what way would ZA Seafoods nevertheless have been incentivized to price its merchandise at other than its normal value? In other words, why is the transshipment scheme itself prima facie evidence that the sales were not representative? Neither defendant nor defendant intervener answer the court's questions with respect to pricing. Instead, the government responds that ZA Seafood's third country sales are actually U.S. sales, and that this result is contrary to the statute, which requires that normal value be based on third country prices for consumption in a country other than the exporting country or the United States. We agree, plaintiffs agree, that 19 U.S.C. 1677B requires normal value to be based on prices for consumption in a country other than the exporting country or the United States. But in its response, defendant bases its assertion on DOC's conclusion that some of ZASF's seafood sales ultimately entered the United States, and that the sales were part of an evasion scheme that were that involved sales first being sold to Vietnam customers and then being sold to customers in the United States. But there is no evidence on the record that any of this happened. Defendant intervener, in answering the same question, was a bit more tempered. It suggested that it was sufficient for Commerce to conclude that ZA Seafood sales might not have actually been third country sales, meaning that they were exported from Vietnam. But this is also speculation. Ultimately, there is no evidence that supports this finding or this conclusion. The fourth question was, what cases and authorities best support your argument? The government did not answer this question with any additional citations or authority or case sites. I would like to bring the court's attention to one case in particular raised by defendant intervener, which is Husteel v. United States 471 F sub 3rd 1349. Husteel stands for the proposition that third country sales are presumptively representative unless proven otherwise. Unlike in Husteel, Commerce in this case did not present actual evidence that ZA Seafood sales were not representative. Here, Commerce simply presumed that consumption in Vietnam did not occur. As such, Commerce's decision on representativeness was not proven. And in fact, Commerce did not even consider ZA Seafood's arguments that the shrimp that it sold to Vietnam could have been processed into non-subject merchandise in Vietnam. Moving on to section 3 of the court's questions. The first question is, please identify any record evidence demonstrating that the price Minfu paid to ZA Seafoods did not reflect the fair value of ZA Seafoods merchandise. The government answered this question using a bit of confidential information, and I'll try to stay away from that in my discussion of that response. Defendant basically has made certain claims based on a comparison of ZA Seafood sales to Minfu versus its sales to other Vietnam purchasers. Defendant intervener also provided a conclusion based on certain Conam-specific pricing. The agency, however, did not make any of these findings or rely on any such calculations in its decision-making. And defendant's explanation, however, therefore, is nothing but post hoc rationalization. More problematic, however, is that there is a serious question as to whether or not the conclusions presented by the defendant in its response to question 3.1 are in fact accurate. Speaking in generalities to avoid discussion of confidential information, during the POI, during the period of review, that is, ZA Seafood sold about 850,000 pounds of shrimp to Minfu of merchandise that it also sold, the same type of merchandise that it also sold to other Vietnam customers. And fully two-thirds of those sales were sold to Minfu at prices higher than other customers. Only about one-third of the 200 sales of merchandise were made at prices lower than sales to other customers. And when sales to Minfu are both higher and lower than selling prices of comparable products to other customers, this rather supports rather than detracts from a finding of representativeness. And it demonstrates that ZA Seafood sales to Minfu were reflective of the fair value of ZA Seafood's merchandise. The next question relates to other investigations where commerce...
Actually, Mr. Gosling, before sure. we move on from the representativeness question, as you know, in the IDM, commerce found that, quote, there had to be some price advantages, excuse me, there had to be some price advantage to the Vietnamese sales to make the transshipment scheme worthwhile, end quote. Why is that not a finding that the actual prices of ZA Seafood's third country sales were not representative?
Certainly, Your Honor. Assuming, as we acknowledged in our responses, that a number of customers of ZA Seafoods, including Minfu in Vietnam, are processors of shrimp, it is not unreasonable to assume that the merchandise that ZA Seafood sold to Minfu, which in the IPA determination it stated were further processed and re-exported, when those merchandise are resold, they are sold with additional value added in Vietnam. And thus, any price at which they are resold to the United States presumably would reflect that added value, so that the price sold resold would not be the same as the price of the sales to Vietnam, and thus would not reflect one way or the other whether or not ZA Seafood sales to Vietnam were representative or not.
Thank you.
I was just about to say that I don't know of any other prior investigations in which commerce similarly has relied on transshipments to determine that third country sales were not representative. With regard to question number 3.2, the government was asked to identify the record evidence that best supports the argument that ZA Seafood's products under review were not consumed in Vietnam as envisioned under the statute. I think we all have to acknowledge again at the beginning that processing subject merchandise into non-subject merchandise constitutes consumption. That has been DOC's practice for decades. And in this case, Commerce specifically excluded from the scope of the Vietnam anti-dumping order on shrimp any shrimp that had been processed into battered shrimp, breaded shrimp, mixed seafood, stuffed dumplings, prepared meals, canned shrimp. There's a host of non-subject shrimp that is produced while processing shrimp. There is evidence on the record that Minfu and other customers of ZA Seafoods in Vietnam are processors of shrimp. But there is no evidence that the shrimp ZA Seafood sold to Vietnam was not processed into non-subject merchandise or resold in Vietnam. The evidence that the government presents in response to this particular question is not substantial evidence that would support their proposition that the shrimp was not consumed in Vietnam. For example, they rely on the fact that the majority of sales of ZA seafood to Vietnam were to Minh Phu. That doesn't speak one way or the other as to whether or not Minh Phu processed that merchandise into non-subject merchandise. They also raise one instance of commingling of Vietnam and Indian origin shrimp in one shipment to the United States. Again, ZASF is not identified as being involved in that particular shipment, and that does not support that shrimp sold to Minh Phu was not further processed and consumed by being manufactured into non-subject merchandise.
Thank you.
There are a couple easy questions following up. 3-2A, we agree that there is no presumption for or against consumption under 19 U.S.C. 1677B. And in response to question 3-2B, plaintiffs likewise do not see a meaningful distinction between a sale for consumption in a third country and a sale followed by consumption in a third country. But we do take issue with defendants' repeated claim that sales from ZA Seafoods to Minh Phu were actually followed by consumption in the United States. Again, the record evidence does not support this categorical statement. Another question to the government was question 3-2C. Why is it irrelevant whether further processing occurred between ZA Seafood's sale to Minh Phu and Minh Phu's alleged export to the United States? Defendant claims that nothing in the record shows that further processing transformed ZA Seafood sales of shrimp into out-of-scope merchandise, but for the same reason, nothing in the record shows that Minh Phu did not transform the merchandise into non-subject merchandise. It's arbitrary for a defendant to draw a conclusion based on an absence of record information on one hand, and to state that similar inferences are unreasonable on the other. In its response to this particular question, the defendant cites Commerce's conclusion that there is now evidence by ZA Seafood's primary Vietnam customer, there is now evidence to show that no such further processing was done by ZA Seafood's primary Vietnam customer before the goods were exported. But of course, there's no evidence on the record at all to support this conclusion. There are just a couple more questions that I'd like to respond to. Question 3-3. I agree that the statute and regulations do not establish how many sales must be found to be not representative to prohibit commerce from using a third country price. The purpose of the 5% viability rule is to ensure that sufficient sales are used for comparison purposes. So it would be unreasonable to me, I believe, to reject a third country market if just a few sales were unrepresentative. However, our point is that defendant has failed to establish that any of ZA Seafood sales to Vietnam were unrepresentative. Defendant's continued claims that ZA Seafood sales to Minh Phu cannot be representative of prices for sales in the third country market because they are ultimately U.S. sales is without support in the record. And last, in response to question 3-4, as emphasized repeatedly, there is no evidence on the record that ZA Seafood sales were part of a transshipment scheme, and the Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee did not, contrary to defendant's assertion, place evidence on the record showing that ZA Seafood sales were part of a transshipment scheme. Moreover, here, where Commerce and defendant both acknowledged that ZA Seafood had no knowledge of any transshipment scheme, how can Commerce expect ZA Seafoods to establish that its sales were not part of a scheme? To do so would be to create an unreasonable, irrebuttable presumption. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gosselink. We'll now move to the government. Ms. Westerkamp?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. And I will be addressing questions, our rebuttal to the questions directed to plaintiffs for 3 through 7. And so just to start off with question 3, our response to that, the main case plaintiffs cited was the alloy piping. And with that, which was, I believe, from 2002, the court said that if it meets the 5% threshold, which was viability, and all the parties agree that viability and representativeness are separate queries, then it's, quote, presumptively representative. But even in that case, the court appeared to agree with our argument that by simply using the term representative without further elaboration, Congress did intend to give commerce discretion to determine what prices are representative on a case-by-case basis. And I would note that with the arm's length and the various market prices and unrelated buyers, those appear to be concepts that were also kind of embedded in the plaintiff's argument in alloy piping with respect to applying the Thai pineapple test, which the court in alloy piping determined would be inappropriate to do with respect to whether a price is representative or not. And then again, with the administrative decision cited, those appear to go to prices being unreliable as opposed to representative. And then turning to our response to question 4, we do not believe that the price can reflect the normal value of ZA Seafoods merchandise. And again, that goes back to the fact that the transshipment scheme is prima facie evidence that the sales are not representative and do not reflect normal value. And I believe Your Honor quoted from the IDM at 19, where Commerce had explained that there, quote, had to be some price advantage to the Vietnamese sales to make the scheme worthwhile, profitable, and price competitive. And we would refer the court to CR 43 and CR 41, which were the third country sales database, as well as the cost of production database, which shows differences in the cost of production and the sales to Ming Food Group when compared to other Vietnamese purchasers. And then—
And that's in the record?
That is in the record, Your Honor. And that's the confidential record. And in our filing, ECF number 53, we have it bracketed what the differences were. But since this is public, I won't go into more detail about that.
Sure. Thank you.
And then with our rebuttal to question 5 directed to the plaintiffs, again, we believe that the Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee submission, as well as the EPA initial decision, are substantial evidence in this case. And with the Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee, and that is at the record PR 94, and at pages 3 through 4 of that, they explained that roughly 60% of ZAC food shipments to Vietnam were to three companies that do comprise the Ming Food Group, and a substantial portion of the goods sold were sold to shrimp exporters in Vietnam. And it appears that, and this is at page 7 of that Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee submission, that, quote, it appears likely that not only are ZAC food shrimp shipments to Vietnam consumed in other markets, but that ZAC food's merchandise sold through Vietnam was resold or shipped to the United States. And then with the EPA decision, which is at the record PR 187, in that decision, CBP had gone through and explained that, quote, on page 5 here, that there is evidence that Ming Food Group processes and commingles shrimp of Indian origin and Vietnamese origin for certain orders. And again, there was that instance, and this is at page 7 of that EPA decision, where Ming Food Group admitted that it found at least one commingled Indian and Vietnamese origin shrimp that went into the customs territory of the United States. And so we believe that these pieces of evidence are substantial evidence in this record that the prices are not representative pursuant to 19 CFR 351.404. And to go to question 6, and this was asking ZAC Foods to identify any record evidence supporting a conclusion that its sales were not involved in the transshipment scheme, But we would point out that ZAC Foods does not provide any evidence that the sales were not involved in that scheme, other than saying that, quote, an absence of evidence is evidence. But as I had mentioned in my response just to the last question, there's that Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee submission, which showed that 60% of its sales went to Ming Fu Group, which is a major exporter. And then even with that IPA decision, where Ming Fu's failure to submit tracking information that was sufficient meant that it really couldn't show what shrimp was going where. And I know on a couple of occasions it was mentioned that nowhere in that IPA decision is ZAC Foods singled out necessarily. But I think considering that it's such a large company, I don't know if you'd necessarily expect CBP to single out or wouldn't have known about this case even, or to single out any specific purchasers that Ming Fu Group had bought the shrimp from, because that was a different question that CBP was looking at. And then with the response to question seven, we don't believe that plaintiff's written response actually addresses how the knowledge test could be applicable. In looking at that response, ZAC Foods appears to argue just that Commerce, quote, failed to make any determination that ZAC Foods' actual selling prices to Vietnam were not representative of normal value, but did not further develop its argument as to why it thinks either of those two knowledge tests would be applicable in this sense. And we believe that, as we explained in our brief, that the knowledge test is not applicable. Nowhere does that appear in the representative in the statute, which is a 19 U.S.C. 1677B(a)(1)(b)(2)(i). And it's not, nowhere does it indicate that it's dependent on whether a respondent had any knowledge of the transshipment scheme. And we think that's further supported by the statement of administrative action when, with respect to the third country sales, it states, in addition, consistent with the agreement, the price to the third country must be representative. And so we don't think the knowledge test, either one, applies in this instance to determining the price representative.
Could I ask you a sort of a practical question? In your view, would non-application of a knowledge test in this case require importers to police the selling behaviors of their downstream third country customers?
I would want to make sure I would run a response by my client with something like that. But I think on this record, at least, Commerce did explicitly say in a couple occasions that it was aware that ZAC Foods didn't know about the transshipment scheme. And I think this is at IDM at 16. It said there's no documentation on the record, but then concluded there is evidence which provides serious concerns with using Vietnamese sales as the basis for normal value. And so in terms of policing the downstream sales, I think that we are in a unique situation here where we don't believe there's precedent directly on this point with respect to transshipment and whether a price is the representativeness of a price. But at least here, Commerce did consider and found that ZAC Foods did not have knowledge, but nonetheless determined that there was enough evidence on the record to show that the prices just couldn't be used.
Thank you.
And that's all I have, Your Honor.
I wanted to ask you about Hustiel, which Mr. Gosselink referenced, and also we see in the plaintiff's responses. How would you distinguish Hustiel as relied upon by the plaintiffs in their responses?
I believe that the defendant intervener was going to specifically address those questions. But I think even with Hustiel, that went to somewhat similar to alloy piping, where a third country sales are presumptively representative unless proven otherwise. And so I think that gets to what's on the record of this particular case. And here again, we have the Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee submission as well as the EPA decision. And other than that, the presumptively representativeness was also mentioned in Alloy Piping. And so I don't think it's too dissimilar from what the court stated in Alloy Piping.
Thank you, counsel. So can we move on to Mr. Walker?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Again, Zach Walker on behalf of Defendant Intervenor Ad Hoc Shrimp Trade Action Committee. I will pick up where Kara left off with Hustio before addressing questions 1, 2, and 8. And I think the situation in this case is not comparable to that that was confronted by the CIT in Hustio. In Hustio, there was no question that the third country sales were consumed in the third country market. Unlike Hustio, Commerce in this case examined record and concluded that the prices of ZASF sales to Vietnam were not representative of sales consumed in the third country market, Vietnam, because they were exported. So we think that is the big distinction between Hustio and the facts of this case. And so now I'll turn back to question one, and that asks plaintiffs to clarify their position regarding the relevance of the reversal of CBP's EPA determination. In answering that question, plaintiffs state that neither CBP decision is relevant, and we heard that again from plaintiffs' counsel this morning. And we believe that plaintiffs are incorrect in arguing that the initial CBP evasion determination is not relevant to the court's review in this case. First, unlike the administrative review determination reached after the final results, TRLED's evasion determination is on the record of this proceeding and was available to be considered, and in fact was considered, by Commerce at the time of the final results. Second, the detailed factual findings within the EPA decision support Commerce's determination in this case. Specifically, CBP explained that Minh Phu, ZASF's primary customer in Vietnam, would use Indian origin shrimp to fill its customers' orders. CBP also explained that Indian and Vietnamese origin shrimp would be commingled in Minh Phu's processing facilities. Finally, and this goes to plaintiff's point we heard about a few minutes ago regarding substantial transformation, the EPA determination did find that the shrimp product imported from India never lost its Indian origin identity before being exported from Vietnam. Specifically, that's page 6 of PR 187, tab 22 of the joint appendix. So accordingly, we disagree with plaintiffs and believe that CBP's initial determination is relevant to the court's review in this case. Turning to plaintiff's response to question 2, in this response, plaintiffs assert that Commerce bears the burden of demonstrating that the price of sales to the proposed third country market are not representative. In making this argument, plaintiffs misread the court's holding in Alloy Piping. In Alloy Piping, the domestic industry plaintiff appealed to the CIT Commerce's determination that the respondent's third country sales were representative. The court in Alloy Piping held that Commerce thoroughly considered the domestic industry's arguments regarding the representativeness of respondents' third country sales and sustained Commerce's determination. Thus, like plaintiff, we understand Alloy Piping as holding that prices of a third country sale are presumed to be representative. Nevertheless, plaintiffs misstate the relevance of Alloy Piping to the facts of this case. Here, domestic producers immediately challenged the representativeness of ZASF's third country sales, showing that these shipments were likely not consumed in Vietnam. Thus, unlike the administrative determination considered by the CIT in Alloy Piping, in this case, Commerce found that any presumption of representativeness had been rebutted, thereby making ZASF sales to Vietnam an inappropriate basis to determine normal value. The remainder of plaintiff's response to this question offers citations to the unchallenged proposition that agencies must abide by their own regulations. However, as we explained, Commerce did follow the statute and its regulations when it considered evidence available to it on the record and concluded that the price of ZASF sales to Vietnam were not representative of the prices of sales in that market. The second part of question two asked about the interaction between the viability and representativeness of a potential third country market. In their response, plaintiffs say that Commerce failed to make any determination that the price of ZASF sales to Vietnam were not representative. In making this argument, plaintiffs analogized the facts of this case to those considered by the CIT in USTEEL. And as there were so many USTEEL decisions, here I'm talking about the 2007 Judge Carman case, 491 FSUP 2D 1283. The issue in USTEEL was whether Commerce could declare that the price of sales to a non-market economy country were inherently non-representative. Unlike the determination considered by the CIT in USTEEL, Commerce did not dismiss Vietnam as a potential third country comparison market because of its status as a non-market economy. Instead, Commerce examined the particular circumstances surrounding ZASF shipments to Vietnam. The fact that the majority of ZASF's shipments were to Vietnamese shrimp exporters suggests that the price of those sales were not representative of prices for consumption in that third country market. Moving now to question eight. There, plaintiffs contend that both alloy piping and USTEEL best support their arguments. However, as we have already explained, neither of these cases support plaintiffs' claim that Commerce unreasonably concluded that the price of sales to Vietnamese shrimp exporters were not representative of prices for consumption in Vietnam. First, the factual situation, as we discussed, of USTEEL was markedly different. In USTEEL, there was no question that the sales at issue were consumed in China, the third market country. Unlike the facts of this case, the record developed supports Commerce's determination that Vietnam was not an appropriate comparison market, as ZASF shipments to Vietnam may have been re-exported. Second, plaintiffs state that alloy piping requires that Commerce determine that prices of the third market country are not representative before declining to calculate normal value using such sales. However, Commerce did evaluate ZASF sales, explaining that the prices were not representative of sales in Vietnam because they may have been exported. Thus, the two cases plaintiffs identify as best supporting their arguments are factually distinct and not germane to analyzing the issues present in this case. Your Honor, I know that our time, we have a few minutes left, but unless there's any further questions, we think the court
was actually, time. Mr. Walker, I was wondering if I could ask you about Cabot Corporation versus United States.
Sure. That was a case that we cited in our response to the court's letter about what is the limits of the court's review of the record in this case, correct?
Sure, you're right. And this goes to the factual verification question. So this is the question. How, if at all, should the differences between the exclusively factual verification report at issue in Cabot and both the factual and legal CBP EPA determination affect the court's decision here?
So in response to the court's letter, we talk about at pages 3 and 4, the progression of this case and how that aligns with the determination that Commerce had to make under the statutory timelines. The reversal of EPA's initial evasion determination didn't happen until after the final results were published in the Federal Register. So Commerce, you know, statutorily, it had to make its determination on the basis of the information presented to it in the course of its review. It had no ability to review the administrative review determination, and it wasn't part of the record considered by the agency.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our arguments, and as counsel know from their prior appearances in this session, I will give you the opportunity to file submission. You don't have to, but you have that opportunity. If in you know, a lot of the arguments this morning, there's something that you want to clarify or respond to more fully. I know Ms. Westerkamp said that she wanted to consult with her client on the question that I posed at oral argument regarding the policing of selling behaviors. So I would give the lawyers until next Tuesday, that's a week, February 1st, to file a submission of not more than 1,250 words. And that concludes our arguments. I'd like to, thank counsel for the very fine arguments and wish you a good day. I was about to say good afternoon, and that's about here. So take care.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Court stands adjourned.